these contradictory sort of rules, it's very, very difficult to manage.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, we're live, everybody. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, bringing it to you every Friday. It's episode 130, I think it is. And we have got a super special show for everyone today. This is actually one of the things one of the shows I've been looking forward to for a long time, because I love doing these Daxtra shows with Sergey. I think they're such fun. We're doing this virtual tour. We're going around different places and visiting these awesome countries and awesome recruiters in these awesome countries. And today we're going to be talking about recruiting in India, one of the most dynamic and exciting and important countries on the planet when it comes to studying, you know, what is happening in the world of work. You have to know what's going on in this country for you to even think about, you know, these global trends that people keep talking about. So absolutely delighted to be here, great to be with you all. Okay, before we kick off, I just want to do a quick sound check as we usually do. So I want to make sure the people in the chat stream can hear me okay. If you can, just let me know you can hear me. Just say yes, no, or whatever in the chat stream. Actually, you should be saying yes if you can hear me. If you'll probably ignore me if you can't. And we should be broadcasting live also on LinkedIn. Yeah, it'd be some telepathy going on if someone says no. We should be broadcasting really early on LinkedIn Live as well. This is like probably shocking to my connections on LinkedIn to see me on air at this hour, because it's only 9 o'clock in the UK. But if you can hear me okay, and you want to pay attention to the next hour where we're going to be talking about recruiting in India, just give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down or whatever. Let me know you can hear me fine. And that would be great. And I think we should be pushing this out on Facebook as well, on the Facebook group. Or is it going to be meta.com group when Facebook rebrand? Who knows where that's going to be? But we should also be broadcasting there also. Okay, we seem to be getting some yeses, which I think means sound is okay. All right. And I want, firstly, you've been very patient, Sergey. So welcome back to the show, Sergey Mac. How are you doing, sir?
I'm always patient, home with you. I'm doing fine, thank you. It's the end of the day on Friday for me. I'm based in Hong Kong. Hello, everyone. Yes, my name is Sergey Mac. Just by means of introduction, I am a co-founder and APAC CEO at Daxtra Technologies. As a company, we deliver process automation workflows to our recruitment and talent acquisition clients around the world. Our solutions are designed to substantially reduce the cost of making a hire through like various approaches to automating business processes, such as parsing, such as AI-based, AI-powered semantic search, matching, and things like that. That all results in extra efficiencies.
Yeah, and the basically, if you're a company that processes a lot of people data, and it's a mess, what you want is to implement something like Daxtra, and it will clean it up for you, and it'll essentially reactivate a lot of dormant data that you have, but you're not basically using. So I think it's actually a critical moment. You should probably use something like Daxtra all the time, but it's particularly acute when you're, say, doing a migration from system to system, or where you've got a new implementation going on, or whether there's other things that are making,
or when you are hiring a lot of people.
Yeah, at volume, which we know, obviously, some of the biggest employers, some of the biggest employing happens in India. So hopefully some of the folks here might be paying attention as well. Okay, Sergey, we always kick off the show with a quick review of the newsletter from last week. So did you read it? And if so, what was interesting, sir?
I did indeed, yes. I mean, I found this one particularly interesting, like almost every article was fascinating, but to highlight the three that I really liked, like I really enjoyed reading this article about scaling your startup business. That was fascinating. The analogy that they make with the Legos, essentially, that I think the gist of it is, if you have too many Legos and a few kids trying to play together and put something together with Lego, then the minute the first kid tries to grab the pieces of Legos, then everyone else wants the same pieces. And so I do recommend reading this article because especially for those of you who have gone through this startup environment and the scaling of that. So that's an interesting read. Certainly relates to my history at Daxtra. We've been around for 20 years this year. So when we started in 2001, there were only three people. We are just short of 200 now, so still a small company, but we certainly went through a journey, and the steps described in the article are pretty much spot on.
Yeah, I think it was a great one, because oftentimes people talk about scaling startups, etc., but they don't actually put headcount numbers on it. And I like this one because they said, yo, at 50, this happens. Yeah. At 250, this happens. And at 500, this happens. Yeah. And it's all about how you communicate with a group. So in other words, there may be a significant cultural change in your business once you get big enough so that you can't actually address everyone in the same room. You know, if it gets beyond 50 people, you couldn't squeeze them in a physical room. You couldn't do a single Zoom call with that number of people contributing. It's too big. Suddenly you have to break it up. And that's when cultural change happens. So I think this is really useful to read for anybody who is kind of on that trajectory. I think it's a really interesting read for anybody, to be honest. But particularly if you're scaling rapidly, have an eye on this, because your culture is going to change at these sort of checkpoints on the journey. Okay, give us a couple more, Sergey.
Yeah, the other one I really enjoyed reading is the how to write good job descriptions. I mean, it's very close to what we do, because a good job description is fundamental for anything related to matching. If you want to match candidates to jobs or jobs to candidates, then you need to elaborate, then you need to give it enough information there. But this puts a different twist on this whole aspect of writing job description, essentially asking you, what is your ultimate goal? Are you trying to, with this job description, this job advertisement, are you trying to attract talent, or you're trying to fend off irrelevant people? So depending on that, the tone of the job description will be different. And essentially, like, if you're trying to filter out irrelevant people, then inevitably you will be filtering out very, very relevant talent as well. So that's quite risky. And certainly with technologies like Daxtra, then it doesn't really matter. You can elaborate, you can make it really attractive. Yes, it will attract a lot of noise, but then there are technologies in place currently or available on the market that will help you with that noise. So that can be done after you've received these applications. So very interesting. I don't know. It's certainly
related to me. It's a philosophical shift, folks. Like, are you writing adverts to attract maximum volume? Is that what you're doing? Or are you writing an advert to deter the irrelevant applicants? And this is thinking about, okay, because you're going to basically have a problem either way. If you have too many candidates, you then have a screening problem. And that's like a huge amount of effort you need to allocate in order to get that number down. However, if you write a negative advert, so to speak, in other words, one that deters people, you then have a slower volume. And psychologically, you've got to kind of adapt to that and realize, you know what, it's going to be a trickle rather than a flood. But hopefully the writing of the advert is accurate enough so that every single candidate's relevancy increases, because you've already done the job of screening by screening people out. So it's a really interesting philosophical challenge. I think 99.999% of recruiters still want to attract like massive volume. Even though we complain about it, we still write in order to attract as many as possible.
And it's a very interesting aspect that they're describing. They're calling it audience paradox. So that's essentially what the article is about. Think about who you want to attract, why you want to attract, and then think how to do it through your job description.
Yeah, she's a really interesting entrepreneur, Eileen Lerner. I think that's her name, Eileen something or other. But she used to be an engineer, then she was a tech recruiter, and then she set up this interviewing IO platform. And she still like just does a lot of sort of thought distribution on her platform. It's a really interesting blog. So take a look at it and be sure to follow Eileen. Okay, one more before we get into the meat of this this topic, Sergey, from last week.
State of AI report 2021. I haven't finished reading it yet, but it's an interesting one, especially that these days it seems that every second company is claiming their AI this, AI that, but really AI has certain definition in order to come up with the problem. We live and breathe AI at Daxtra. We started as a spin out from AI department of Edinburgh University, and it's not just like some rules-based system. You're required to process absolutely vast amounts of data to train your AI engines on that. So it's an interesting thing to read if any of you guys are on the technology side of TA.
Yeah, I think basically it's one of those annuals that I think I always read, because these two, Hogarth and Nathan Benarch, have done a great job of basically synthesizing what is going on in the state of AI, and they just give you as thorough and as comprehensive a breakdown as possible. It's a monstrous deck, so don't feel like you need to like completely digest everything, but it's one of those you need to keep in your locker because you're going to refer to it across the entire year. So a really significant piece of work. I think, to be honest with you, is a little bit overly technical at times. You know, the sometimes when you have a deck, you need to make it so it's readable without a narrator. Nathan's not presenting this to us. We have to read it. And sometimes slide by slide, it wasn't entirely clear. So it could be improved that way.
Yeah.
But don't be intimidated by it. I still think it's something as an AI person you need to read. And I think as a recruiter, you cannot not care about
it. Yeah, it all comes down who the intended audience is, I guess. But it pretty clearly, in layman's terms, describes what AI is, as opposed to someone calling something AI, where you kind of go, okay, I get the first bit, the artificial bit. Where is the second one?
You're such a cynic. The artificial's right. The intelligence isn't. Okay, let's talk about this, because you know there's technology coming out of everywhere from India. It's also relevant to see where technology is implemented in recruiting processes in this country. So let's get some of our guests on board. Now, I know I said initially we're going to get everyone on one go, but I've realized that actually we don't have the space to do it. So for the folks who are going to sort of join the panel, please bear with me. We're going to do a little bit of a rotation, but we're going to get people on and off as we go. So I think firstly, let's see who's here. That would be the first determinant. Okay, I think Sarang is here. Let's bring him on. Okay, cool. I think we also have, do we have Savita? Yes, we do. Let's bring Savita on as well. Let's do this. I think Achyut is here. Let's do this. Bring him on as well. Oh yeah, Mitasha as well. We can bring four on. So Bharat and Sonal, we're bringing you on a bit later because I really want to explore your comparative experience. These are two recruiters that have been Indian recruiters, but then have relocated to Europe. And I really want to get that comparative view as well. Oh, we have Savita here. Good afternoon, Savita.
Hi,
Savita.
Hello, everyone. Hi, Sarang. Hi,
good afternoon. Hi, Savita. Everybody. Good to see you. Hi, Hang. Hi.
Yeah, good to meet you.
Great. Okay, so whilst the other two are coming on, I wonder whether we could introduce ourselves real quick. So, Savita, for the folks who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. First of all, thank you so much for inviting me to this webinar. And good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all the folks in the audience. Great to see a lot of you here. My name is Savita, and I head up recruitment for a company called ThoughtWorks in India. ThoughtWorks is an IT services company. We do custom IT software solutions for our clients. It's a 27-year-old company, and we're in India for the last 20 years. I have been in this TA space, mostly in the IT recruitment space, for over 21 years now. And this is my seventh year in ThoughtWorks, and thoroughly enjoying my job. And I simply love recruitment, and I have a great passion for hiring.
And you have to love the recruitment to still be doing it for 20 years, Savita. You know, that's commitment.
Thank you.
That's great. And we'll look forward to hearing from you because I think ThoughtWorks is very a famous company, global company as well. So it'll be interesting to see how the dynamic shifts region to region. Let's go to you, Sarang. Who are you and what it is you do?
Hi, everyone. My name is Sarang. I'm part of Capgemini. I've been in Capgemini just over 12 years now. Before joining Capgemini, I was part of recruitment process outsourcing company. So I used to source candidates, and that's when my interest in sourcing and recruitment kind of started. Before that, my first job was actually digital marketing. So these two kind of things kind of came together, and now I'm leading employer branding and talent attraction for Capgemini globally. I'm great to be here. While I've done employer branding and currently doing, but recruitment and sourcing is something very close to my heart, and happy to be here.
unusual combinations around. There's usually like hostility between sources and attractors, aren't they? They're like two diametric opposites, but you've combined them in one person. That's amazing. Okay, great. Mitasha, you're here as well. Great to see you. Can you quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what you're doing?
Perfect. Thank you for having me, Hung. I work with people and culture in startups. I currently head the people function at a retail tech startup called Unifine, and I consult freelance with some other pre-series and series A startups in the country. Have worked in HR in the hedge fund as alternative asset management industries, as well as the tech stuff. So for me, I prefer staying with the smaller firms because it gives me a chance and a scope to explore people operations as a whole, along with recruiting, the full cycle. And that's my passion, to kind of connect the dots.
Absolutely. So great to welcome you here. Akshat is basically, I think, trying to get on. I'm going to try and re-invite you. But whilst we're kind of dealing with that technically, we'll get on with the show. Let's throw it out there at the beginning. Both myself and Sergey, forgive me, Sergey, if I speak for you in this case, but we are like ignorant of the market in India because we've never operated as a recruiter in there. So I'd be very interested to know, like, what do you think is the first misconception non-Indian recruiters have of the Indian recruiting market? Is there anything that you come across when you're speaking to, you know, your global colleagues, your international colleagues, and, you know, they're making a primary assumption? You think, you know what, that's not how it is. Is there anything like that that you think is prominent in your mind? Let's go to you firstly with this one, Mitasha.
Yeah, I think a lot of folks are very surprised that there's very little connection between speaking formal, proper British English or American English and actually getting the job done. So especially when it comes to technology and, you know, communication, I think the assumption is that Indians aren't very good at it. However, I think that's really changing because, you know, you can kind of see that that there's very little gap between good communication but good English, and that's changing. So yeah,
so what you're saying is that actually there is an assumption that the English language standard is actually quite low in India, but in fact that's not the case. Like you're saying that gap isn't there.
I think cultural communication gaps are there, yes. So the way we communicate, even you and I, there will be a little bit of that cultural tonal difference, of course. But can we get the point across and can we get the job done? Yes. So I think the whole, you know, IELTS, TOEFL, you need to know the language and the grammar is kind of overrated. And that's something that that focus has shifted with tech coming into prominence now.
Yeah. And also, I think these days with the rise of video communication, everyone's got a little bit more used to the idea of communicating this way. And, you know, again, with remote distribution, we should be interacting with international colleagues a bit more. So perhaps, you know, these types of perceptions will slide away a little bit. Okay, we seem to have lost Sarang and Achut. I don't know why. I'm going to try and bring them back. But Savita, can we go to you with this? What is like one misconception that you've encountered, maybe some of your colleagues, maybe some of the people you've dealt with, you know, about the India market, but you think actually that's not how it is? You've got it wrong.
A huge plus one to what was told right now. I think that misconception of people not knowing English or the language barrier is definitely not there. And also there's a misconception that Indians are just good in technology and not in consulting. And the jobs that involve working with clients, working with customers across the globe. And I don't think that is true either. With a lot of Indians studying abroad, going abroad, there are these people have, you know, experiences and knowledge of multicultural experiences. So I think they are good in all these aspects as well. It is not a place where you need to only outsource the low-end jobs, you know, the tech jobs, labor-intensive jobs to India. And there's a lot of good work, high-end work, both in product management and services space that is happening. So that's another big myth.
A very significant point. So the perception has been, India is great for this, you know, high volume, low skill labor, let's say, call center stuff. You know, there was a big period where people were thinking about this. And you're saying that actually the market has matured since that point, and actually there's loads of different skill sets that you can activate if you were to drop that that perception somewhat.
The startup ecosystem and then flux of new product engineering companies and other that has come in. I mean, there's absolutely great talent available in India.
Yeah, I think so. As you say, we'll talk on the growth of some of these big unicorns in a moment, because I think there is like a very unique ecosystem in India from a technology point of view, which we touch on. Okay, the reverse question. This may be difficult to answer, but
sorry to interrupt. I think Sarang is asking you to bring him back.
Sarang, I have invited you, so there should be a way. I'll keep doing it. Don't worry. We'll get you back, sir. I'll ask the second question. This may be tough to answer, but I want you to be honest, you two. What is a conception that outsiders have of India that is actually correct? Broadly, you know, you think, you know, trends-wise, this generally does happen. If you're a recruiter in India, you kind of got to be aware of this. So let's imagine you've got a recruiter living in Australia. They've relocated to India. They want to work there, and they don't know anything about the local market. And you're there to basically say, you know what? Here is something you should know. What is that thing? Mitasha, go to you.
Yeah, so I'd say I think it's a tough pill to swallow, but people aren't very consistent with accepting offers, joining the same companies and offer shopping. So if any of my friends from around the world are going to be happy about, oh, I've, you know, made two offers for the one role, once, you know, your final person, once the backup. No, my friend, you need to probably extend two, three more offers because everyone's offer shopping all the time. And unfortunately, this happens at CXO levels. It happens with, you know, MDs. It happens at all levels. So that's one really horrible thing that I think we'd have to own up to. And the second isn't really a bad thing. It's just that I think the younger lot, the Gen Z cohorts a lot better, is that we need to get better with async communication. So if people think we're not very good with async and written, clear, crisp, succinct written communication, it's true. We tend to be more verbose than some of our global counterparts.
Okay, let's sit on this one a little bit, because on the conversation I had on LinkedIn earlier, as a precursor to the show, there were a few comments of this type as well. And you mentioned something really interesting. You used the term overshopping. So is this something that basically candidates tend to do, where they just generate like multiple opportunities and they want to basically always hedge as to what is the best thing, the optimal thing for them to sell? Sarang, you're nodding your head there. What's your experience of this phenomenon?
So I think it was already there, but because of COVID, it has kind of exploded. I wouldn't want to generalize, but a lot of, especially in the IT services, you have these long 3 months kind of notice period, which is very peculiar to India, right? When you resign, from that time when you get out, there's a 3 month notice period, and a lot of employees think that it's a good retention strategy, or it's an internal, you know, it helps them to find more time to reallocate the resources and all of it. But in a lot of cases, it works the other way, where from the time someone resigns, they have 3 months to go and shop around and find out who's going to pay me better, which is the best company, all of that. And in that mindset, even if I give one candidate an offer, in most often or not, and again, I'm talking about IT services, that might be different from different industries, is they will have a typical good candidate will have at least 2+ offers in their hand. And then recruiters on the date of joining or before that has to call up candidates consistently to find out if they are still in the engagement, or then you'll start to hear, I'm joining another company. And then it's a big shock for the hiring managers, because they are all slotted for this person to join on Monday, just to find out they have to go back and start another search, and it, you know, kind of goes on. After COVID, because of the whole digital transformation and so much of demand in the market, today that number of 2 offers has gone to 5 offers, and they're crazy. I mean, candidates are just asking for you know, crazy amount of hikes and, you know, increments, which is also throwing, you know, a lot of calculations. So a lot of these IT services companies would have India cost centers, you know, where they manage these large resource pools. But now they will have to rethink about what, you know, that India is, again, India is still not just a cost center, but there's a lot of innovation happened. But the cost of these resources or people are consistently going up. In some cases, I think someone in Bangalore said that it's easier to find someone in San Francisco or Los Angeles than finding in Bangalore. So it's kind of, you know, going up in that case. However, on the other side, I also feel that because of this demand, there's a lot of opportunities that, you know, has been brought to the Indian talent, which was previously not there. A lot of companies are not just hiring the typical software engineers kind of thing, but really the architect, the innovation, the lot of, you know, people who are not just there as a back office or a support, but really driving the products and services innovation strategy. But yeah, as I said, it's India, Indian market from an offer engagement is a very, very peculiar market.
That's right, you know what I do anticipate this, maybe it right now it's an acute a scenario in India, but I believe it's likely to be a global phenomena where candidates obviously have more opportunity, where they have increased opportunity. You have an abundance mindset, suddenly you become a lot more confident in your negotiation, less pressure to accept. If you have accepted, less pressure to turn up. You know, all of these things you can start imagining starting to kind of become more a global phenomena. So it'll be interesting to know what Indian recruiters do to mitigate against this. Is there a way to kind of, is there tooling that helps? Is it simply just getting on top of the candidate? What do you do to mitigate against this? Or do you kind of accept that's going to happen and simply parallel just overhire even to compensate for it? Because you're thinking, you know what, the 10% of the people we've offered may not actually end up being a day one starter. I need to actually hire 110% of people in order to deliver to the business.
Yeah.
Thoughts on this, Sabina?
Yeah.
Yes. Go ahead, Sabina.
I can take that. So I think the golden rule here is don't stop your candidate pipeline. Even during lean times, even if your hiring manager says, go a little slow, we just keep the pipeline on, you keep the candidates warm, you engage with your team, with our candidates, you continue, you put enough efforts and budget and time on employer branding, and just don't stop that, don't start it when you want to hire someone. So that should be a continuous engagement and continuous activity. Then there are other ways of doing it, you know, like what some of the techniques what I have used, at least in my job here in ThoughtWorks, is that we continuously mine even what we call as the silver medalist candidates, the candidates who come up to the last round of interview but could not make it. And after 6 months, we go back to them because we give feedback to them on what they need to improve, what are the gaps. So bringing such candidates back into the pipeline helps a lot because they already know about your company. They've talked to you. They're like your ambassadors. So you treat your candidates well, they'll come back to you. So that helps because getting fresh candidates always is very hard. The rule is don't stop a candidate pipeline. You know?
Let me just step in right there, Savita. You've said some really interesting things. I want to just reconfirm them. So basically you're saying don't switch it. There's no like stop and start when it comes to candidate engagement. You've got to keep going all the way through.
Yes.
It's too high risk to just declare that you've done it. So you got to keep going. And second innovation you're talking about is that the sort of unsuccessful at first try candidates, you need to find a way to pipe them back into the funnel because you know what? Everyone's skills are going to develop over time. A person isn't right now, 6 months down the line, may have filled the gaps of knowledge, may have matured, all of these things might have occurred, but that person can be immediately accelerated through your pipeline. So it's almost like you've created a circular loop to get this person into. And I think that's a model that, I mean, if you're recruiting anybody, that sounds like a model you should adopt, right? So,
not only in India, I would say. I think that's an amazing model that should be universal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You need a strong CRM to do that. Because you're trying to do this off your email, that's not happening. I assume there's a great market for CRM tech.
Yeah, and most of these modern applicant tracking systems give you the options of tagging candidates and, you know, putting them as prospects. And there are so many tools available these days, and technology has definitely helped a lot. We used to do it. I mean, I remember when I was doing hands-on recruiting several years ago, we used to do it on Excel trackers. So now life is good. You have tools.
That's great. And actually, AK just joined us, and it seems like stability. So great to see you, sir. Been a little while. Wonderful to see you. Can you quickly introduce yourself to the folks who don't know you? Who are you and what it is you do?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm AK. I've been a recruiter for 29 years. I probably started much before Google or internet or mobile phone. So I'm kind of a Neanderthal. I'm really happy to be here, Hung. You kind of make life so good for recruiters. As a, I'm a self-employed, passionate recruiter. I help companies find talent they can't find. And so whatever Savita and Sarang were saying, I did too. And if they had got all the people they want, people like me would not have been business. Okay, so I guess it's fine. Yeah, I'm a global recruiter. I help companies find talent they can't find. It's primarily two sets. One is for multinational companies setting up in India. I bring back Indians from all over the world. And then when Indian companies go abroad, I help them find the right local talent across the world. And for that, I'm part of a worldwide recruiter network. I have over 500 partners in 41 countries. Each of those recruiters are smarter than me and probably great at their domain. I just enjoy the fun.
Well, it's great to have you, AK. And I think your experience is fascinating also because of your kind of international approach. You're speaking to expat in sort of Indians that might be returning. You're potentially placing Indian people outside of India also. So all of these things are going to be super interesting to review.
Let me interrupt you there. Let me interrupt you, Hung. Not only Indians abroad, I have placed a Spanish-speaking person in Mexico for an Israeli company. Okay, thanks to internet.
Wow.
Sitting in India.
thanks to the internet, which is let's move it on to that second point, because suddenly with sort of, let's talk about the pandemic, because it's been a huge impact obviously in every country, but the manifestations have been different in every country. One of the things that's happened in the UK, particularly with this oscillation of in and out, lockdown, not lockdown, is that people have got very dissatisfied with the movement between office and non-office. And there's now quite a strong white collar movement to say no more office. You can even see it's becoming political because the politicians are saying you're going back. You speak to any of the recruiters in the UK, they're saying that's not happening. So it's almost becoming like a political conflict. I wanted to know what the status of remote working is in India. Is there still an expectation that people are going to show up to the office? That's where your job is. Come in. Or have you kind of adopted a view where actually, no, you can work from wherever you want, and we're going to flex it out. What's the attitude of Indian employers, I guess, when it comes to remote working? Sarang, you want to have a go at this?
Yeah, go ahead, Sarang.
Yeah, so it's been a roller coaster ride in India as well. I think as of now, while some of the people, especially maybe leaders or managers, may have started to go back to the office, the majority people, especially the IT services, is still working from home because the government is still figuring out the third wave will happen or not. In fact, the vaccinations are going in full flow. Yesterday we reached 100 crore mark, which is a big milestone for vaccinations for India. But more importantly, I think there are two stream of thoughts. The managers, in a lot of cases, because they have been working in that mindset for 20 years or whatever, some of them would still prefer to have their teams in office. But a lot of, I would say, millennials or especially the woman talent who has really got the flexibility would want to work from the home. So I think a lot of companies are trying to figure out what they call is a hybrid approach, where you can work 3 days from office, 2 days from home, and all of that. However, what I don't think what we yet have figured out is what does this mean for people who are not in the office when the key decisions are taken? What does it mean for managers in terms of, you know, managing these hybrid people? Because we still feel that there might be more advantage to people who are in office versus who are not. Also, a lot of recruitment heads have figured out that, you know, this is a good opportunity to hire people who are not in their people who are not in their cities. Like, you know, in all of these, I think 1.5 or 2 years, at least what I have seen is we have reached out to literally everyone who has the right skill, right experience, wherever they are in India. So that has, helped us to increase the talent pool. Now, but if we start to go back to office, you know, the question is, okay, what will happen to that strategy? So it's also, I think there's a lot of contemplation happening. I think some companies are advanced in that case in terms of having the new normal policies in office, training their managers, creating the suite of regulations, and some companies are still kind of on that journey to see, okay, you know, how situation unfolds. But I think one thing I can say is I don't think we're going back to the 100% come to office, because I'm sure Savita from Bangalore would know that, you know, the amount of time that, you know, especially in India, you get in traveling in Bangalore, in Mumbai, in Gurgaon is humongous. And companies have figured out that they, you know, people can actually spend more time with their families and be more productive. And also there's a cost benefit for companies, because in India, you see these large, offices with thousands of people. And so there's a real estate cost and all of that, which I think there is an opportunity to give that some of that as a benefit back to the employees as well. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting times.
Just a quick thank you, Saran. Quick one. The most amazing traffic jam I ever been in was actually in Bangalore. And I remember my Indian friends at the time, they were saying, "Hung, get ready for this. You need to have food ready. You're going to be sitting here for a long time." And it was a 2-hour thing.
Absolutely.
Amazing. What you're saying here, and I can't go to everyone with the same question, folks, so we're going to just roll through. But this seems like it's very similar sort of global phenomena, where you have the managerial tier that's more pro-office, but you have the employee tier that's saying, you know what, I don't want to do the commute anymore. And I think that seems to be a very interesting dynamic that's starting to occur, where it might tell us a lot about what management really has always been. It's almost like, yes, they're not comfortable if they can't eyeball you because they want to, there's a trust gap, obviously. Maybe there's a sense that performance is not being monitored. All these types of things, whereas the employees are kind of pushing back heavily on this. So I think that's a conversation definitely happening in UK, definitely in the US as well. Europe, I don't know what the situation is too much, but if you're in Europe, please let me know. Are you getting an executive versus employee dynamic going on when it comes to remote office work? Saran, you mentioned something super interesting, which I want to bring to the fore as well, which was this issue that remote working might actually be supportive of diversity or diversifying the workforce, particularly we have a gendered childcare. That's generally the case. Women have generally been the primary caregiver, I think, in every society, every country. And it may be that greater control and flexibility is going to support more women in the workforce. So what is the conversation with regards to diversity in India? Is it kind of falling along similar lines as we see the UK, US dominate the conversation when it comes to DE&I? Or is there other things that you care about when you're talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion in India? And Mitasha, let's go with you in this. You're a bit of an expert, aren't you, on this space?
even with respect to the previous question, if I can take a minute, I think the camps are very divided. So when we talk of India today, we're talking about, with particularly the three of them heading large recruiting divisions and companies, etc. I think a lot of the problems with remote and not transitioning back to work versus doing it, there's two very, very different camps, where a lot of it in the smaller tech startup space has got nothing to do with micromanaging or people not doing their jobs. It's just got to do with the fact that retention is a major problem. People are not attached and engaged enough if you're perennially working remotely. And second, there's very little serendipity and unintentional learning that actually happens a part of, you know, when you're coming together, especially for early career professionals, which is the largest part of, you know, the your unicorns and smaller companies and, you know, all these startups, right? So one part of the camp of, you know, do we go and bring people to office or do we not, is actually got to do with a lot of this learning engagement and how do you retain talent versus just micromanaging. So for bigger firms, there's a cost trade-off, there's diversity, etc. But for your pre-series A, series A, whether it's your Sequoia-funded companies, Tiger Global-funded companies, they all want to come back to office and have their key players, you know, work together. And again, I'm not going to say D&I doesn't exist, because it does. And, you know, with investment banks, with large IT firms, I've seen the kind of growth all these large companies have made. But if you personally ask me, I don't think we are doing very well in women in tech. We're not doing very well with diversity metrics and KPIs in the smaller, less than 500, the unicorns, the progressive companies at all. I think it's there. I mean, it's also a matter of fact that most of our generation tends to be very independent. We're tending to choose, again, very much in line with how San Francisco evolved 20, 30 years ago, right? Women push our biological clocks. We are pushing, you know, personal choices and prioritizing careers, etc. So that's happening. And as a result of that, of course, the metrics get better. We get more opportunities. But is that a function of us choosing to prioritize D&I? I don't think so. Not in the smaller, small company spaces.
Yeah, very interesting.
Are you seeing it changing, Leticia? Are you seeing it rapidly changing, or is it stale? What would you say about the dynamics of that?
I mean, I really don't know. I think I've seen too much of very bare bones basic where no one cares in the first 5-7 years. It all It's all very performative at the later stage. So I could be called a cynic or whatever, but then the bare reality of a lot of places and a lot of founders I interact with is there's no scope. I mean, you know, like we discussed, offer shopping, recruiting problems. These are all business problems. These aren't recruiting problems. And hung, that number isn't 110%. That number today, the best of Bangalore startups need to make 3-4 offers to get one person to join in. And you know your tenure, it's not 110%. It's crazy. Your hikes are at 600%, 400%. So, you know, when you're dealing with business and revenue problems, I don't blame people for not thinking about diversity at that point of time. It's a demand and supply problem. When we start fixing the supply side, diversity will follow.
That's, you know what, that's a it's a really interesting point, because when a company is under crisis, it's very hard to focus on things. I'm sorry to interrupt, folks, but where there's background noise, can you put your mic on mute? Yeah, thank you. That's just to preserve sort of the audio for podcasting and stuff like this. Sergey, I think
this is coming.
I might have to mute you, my friend. Okay. I've actually taken executive action and silenced Sergey. You know, what's interesting is that we're in three different countries and six different locations, but there's like construction work in every single there's going to be a pneumatic drill happening any moment in my place. So it's crazy. So DE&I, I think you're absolutely right. It's like we care about this, but when a company is under crisis, it's very difficult to prioritize anything other than survival. So when that survival moment is happening, we need to just like deliver against this. Only when we have a little bit of window are we able to explore these other aspects, which I think is sometimes when you get these like, you know, superstar companies or whatnot, like market leading companies that inevitably have amazing DE&I policies and amazing stats and stuff like this. Half of me thinks, you know what, that's great, but some of those are not going to be easily replicable by a company that's living week by week, you know, based on, you know, cash flow issues. So so it's one of those where, yes, we have exemplars, but we also have to understand where we can adopt and learn. Okay. Let's talk about this globalization of talent. And has this affected sort of the availability of talent in India? Because a lot of people, I think a lot of companies outside of India are now thinking, oh, we're remote. We could hire a load of cool Indian talent. And suddenly, as an Indian-based employer, you might be competing with San Francisco startups, or you might be competing with financial organizations in New York, and they're paying huge salaries and stuff like this. Is this something you're seeing? And if so, what is the local employer response to these, other than raising salaries? Thoughts on this are open to anybody who wants to contribute.
This is why I come back to office, tying into my earlier point as well.
Yeah, I think I don't know if there's a silver bullet answer to this hung, but this is definitely a problem. We have a lot of companies in Germany and UK who are hiring the local talent, and even from Southeast Asia as well, and giving them the option and giving them salaries what they would have paid people there. And living in India, it's like you hit a jackpot if you get a job with such companies. People are still digesting to figure out what should be the better way of countering this. But of course, working remote is not always fun. There is the culture aspect, and then the employee engagement, as Natasha pointed out, the learning what you get by being in office, all that is missing. And especially for engineers, I think especially in the when they are in the first 5 or 6 years of their career, the more they spend time with their peers and people who know more than them, they learn quite a lot by osmosis. And that doesn't happen if you sit remotely and just focus on getting more money. So I'm not sure how the trend has definitely started, but we should wait and watch how this thing is going to pan out in the long run. It might work to a certain extent, but even then, I don't know how much of a success is this going to have. Because you cannot compete with them by just throwing money. That's not an answer to it. We simply cannot do that.
It probably is a huge has inflationary value to local salary costs as well, right?
Yes.
So this is again good and bad, because obviously it means that people are earning more money at the individual level. Yeah. But from an employer point of view, it's suddenly your salary costs are shooting through the roof.
Yeah, the wage cost is going really high. And then probably the kind of work what we get from other regions to India might actually stop. It might, it is not cheaper to hire an engineer in Bangalore versus San Francisco anymore. So lot of the IT industry started in India because of the cost difference and what we were bringing. But I don't know if that will last long. I had one point on the D&I topic, because we are, ThoughtWorks does a lot of work in this space, and that's very close to my heart as well. So one thing I want to say, that although startups and smaller companies may not be able to focus on D&I, it is the same when it comes to scale-ups and large organizations. So what I'm saying is there should be an intention. Unless there is an intention and there's intentionally you want to do work in the D&I space, it will not happen even in larger companies. Because if you just leave it to business, nobody wants to put their focus, because it's a lot of hard work. The women in tech are less in India, and women taking up STEM studies is low. It starts from the grassroots, right?
Is that true? I thought it was good for gender adversity at the education level at STEM. I thought basically India produced lots of women engineers.
No. Compared to men, very, very few. And then what happens is after the first 3 or 4 years, women are taking a break from work is very high in India. Women are the primary caregivers. So whether it's taking care of an elderly parent at home or a child or a family, it's a women's career that takes a back seat. And there are these hundreds and brilliant women who after the first 3-4 years just fall off the grid, and you don't know how to bring them back to work. So bringing women back to work, whether it's in tech or non-tech or workforce itself, is a huge problem that we have to tackle and find answers to if we really want to increase the number of women in the workforce.
Well, Savita, let's move straight on to this, because it's kind of related to the idea of the rise of alternative forms of engaging with workers. If women are the primary caregivers in India, as they are in most countries on the planet, full-time, permanent, on-site, probably suboptimal to that person. But we're starting to see employers starting to use different techniques or different contracts to get people working. Part-time maybe job share, maybe even stuff where you're not permanently employed per se, but there's a way in which this person can deliver value and skills and you're still accessing that talent. How is that working at the corporate level? Is there ways in which you're strategically doing this, or is it still pretty much hodgepodge based on individual cases?
Yeah, So that's right. That's what I'm saying. Unless the organization, right from the leadership of the company, from the CEO downwards, is intentional about bringing about changes and increasing number of women or anything related to diversity, because I don't want to call diversity only as women, but also looking at underrepresented minorities, whether it is getting people from the LGBTQ, from transgender communities, multi-generational workforce, people working in smaller cities and towns. And there is so much of diversity. In India, you also have something called geographical diversity. Like when we hire people, grads from campus or from universities, we go to even the remote corners of India where you have good engineering schools where you can find good talent. We do not want to focus only on larger or only well-known universities, right? You do have talent everywhere. So you know, bringing up that whole thing of diversity, and once you bring them in, how do you engage with them? How do you build that inclusivity in the system, in the organization? So it's pretty complicated, and it should be looked at holistically. Your job doesn't just stop at hiring women or hiring diversity or bringing people. There's a lot more to be done once they come in. They come in to include them and have a inclusive workspace as well, and working, giving the same opportunities, everything, right? So there's just so much going on in that space. I think we'll run out of time if we talk about it now. We probably should have a separate webinar to just discuss DE&I.
I think so. And by the way, folks, all of these topics are going to take, you know, we could talk it's an entire series of it. So we are skimming a little bit, and it's something that unfortunately we have to do, but it gives us an excuse to return to do part two, part three, part four on this. But I'll tell you something about the labor force participation of returning parents, particularly returning mothers, is a huge challenge for everybody. No one's actually got it systematically right. Because job design is designed and optimized for someone who's going to be there full-time, permanent, on-site. That's the default template. And anything that deviates on that causes like trauma. It causes difficulty for a system. You simply have to look at your ATS. I guarantee you, your ATS is designed around the idea this person is full-time, permanent, on-site. So we need to really have a moment where we're rethinking how is there different ways in which this person can interact with our organization? Does it have to be an employer-employee relationship? How does that look in terms of we designing tools to make this work? How does it look in terms of our design of the recruiting process? Yeah. Because that's also going to change, because again, the way in which we interview people and assess people is based on this person being a full-time employee. Anyway, global issue that we have to deal with. Let's talk about geography. Well, I want to touch on this because India is a massive country, continental scale. What is the situation in terms of like employee mobility? Again, I want to deal with this kind of pre-COVID and post-COVID to see whether there's any kind of change. India is so large, it's not casually saying, oh, here, we've got a job here, relocate. It's not like living in the Netherlands where everything is within 30 minutes. You know, it's like, okay, sure, I can do it. In India, it might be like moving time zones and, you know, a very significant relocate, different language, different culture, everything. What is your sense of labor mobility in India? And do recruiters tend to think, you know what, this guy is from that part of the country, he's not coming to this part, let's avoid that. Is that sense happening? AK, go to you on this.
Yeah. I think post-COVID, all these rules change. And so I personally feel it's not the prerogative of the employer. The employee calls all the shots. The power of choice has moved to the employee. He or she decides where to work with, when to work with, how to work with. So I don't think company policies can be made on this. And if at all you're saying it's just pure lip service, I would agree with about the gender diversity part. But I would feel there's a lot more to be done with age diversity also. Because believe me, it's high time we went back at a lot of these acceptable norms. Today, there is no sanctity of retirement at 60. In fact, people at 60 are physically, they don't need to do physical work. It's more the intellect. So I don't see any reason why companies are even having a hang up about hiring people above 50. And again, we're talking about interim workers, we're talking about gig workers, hybrid work. Company policies are still stuck in the warp of time. You know? They're still 10 years old. So I don't think honestly, as a ringside observer, I feel all these policies have been done more by fear of missing out rather than any strategic stuff. So
that unfortunately is I think a general rule for most employers. It takes a brave company, usually brave leadership, to really step forward, like jump into the void, so to speak, because everyone's looking for somebody else to demonstrate that this is okay and it works. But you're absolutely spot on with ageism. We actually talked about ageism, I think, a couple of weeks ago on Brain Food Live.
I want to talk about even the context of earlier, because right now the choice is purely with the candidate. Okay. And that's what we don't recognize. Okay. A lot of these things are nice to have, good lip service kind of stuff said in conferences, but in reality, it's not the kitchen. And even what Mitasha mentioned about the culture part. Okay. Most people, a company's culture is all about by observing. Okay. And if you're going to sit at home and work from home, very little bonding happens. And most of us are still looking at numbers of attrition within a year. What I would feel is, I mean, we should be a lot less myopic. The cost of a hire is more in terms of quality of hire. It's not just about the person hitting the ground for this particular role, but how well the person performs on the role and goes on to take on higher responsibilities. So I think the canvas or the lens should be, in 3 years, what is happening? Is this guy going on to the next role or not? So I think a whole lot of paradigm shifts will happen the moment you look at attrition like that. And also the point of Savita mentioning about women coming back. The biggest problem is at what salary do you take them in? You can see the gender pay for the same kind of experience for man and woman different. And especially when a person takes a break, it widens. So I personally feel most of these policies are man-made. Okay. And I would feel that they will be market-driven sooner or later. And the faster
just step in there, AK. The big split in terms of salary, there's good studies on this, is actually on first career break. Simply because the person taking a break, the career trajectory changes completely. And it's usually taking a break at the time when your earning potential is actually at the highest. So in other words, late 20s, early 30s, that's when you're stepping into these senior managerial positions or starting to accelerate your career. That also happens to be the time when women I would say today's world are probably thinking optimally, this is the time to start a family. So our entire system is not designed for human to be compatible for both genders. That's the unfortunate case. And if we really want to fix the problem, we need to really go back to the primary principles and redesign the system so it's compatible for any type of gender and any type of lifestyle, really. Anyway, we have to move on real quick, so I realize the time is flying by, folks. But I want to kind of touch a little bit on the tech ecosystem and the recruiting ecosystem in India, because we do have a very unique system. We have different tools, different ways to behave online. Everyone uses LinkedIn still, but is LinkedIn the only thing that recruiters use? What other technologies, what other platforms should a recruiter be aware of if they're recruiting in India? Let's go all the way around. So everyone answer one thing. Let's go to you, Mitasha. Outside of LinkedIn, what else should people be using?
Twitter. I think all DAO enthusiasts, crypto enthusiasts, product designers, marketers, everyone's on it. I think it's fantastic.
That's right. Twitter and Clubhouse, very India, like there's a big India dominance there. So go where the people are. So if people seem to be adopting technologies or making use of it, just go there. That's basically a decent place where you can see. Go to you, Sarang. Give me a tool or a product that you think, you know what, this is where is a decent place to interact with India candidates.
The number one tool in India is Naukri.com. And the other place where I think there still needs to be a lot of work to be done is your own ATS, because that's where
you have a lot of data there already, right? So we won't even have time to talk about data privacy, but Naukri, very famous. I think most people would know about it if you know anything about international recruiting. But if you don't know Indian sort of recruiting at all, Naukri.com, basically you need to be aware of it. If you're going to be present somewhere, you need to be present there. Okay, AK, give me something else. It's going to be harder as you go around, right? But
I think it's about WhatsApp. Okay, I think today WhatsApp is a great tool for sourcing. and I would go by that. I told you, because if Sarang and Savita got those people, I wouldn't be in business. Like I told you, I need to look where they're not looking at.
Well, you know what? It's very interesting because WhatsApp is not used at all in the US. You know, if you have any US friends, they, you know, you try WhatsApp and you're never going to reply. It is mainly used in European spaces, but never for recruiting, as far as I know. So, but it's very interesting that different cultures adopt it in different ways and use it different ways. So WhatsApp.
WhatsApp is huge here in Asia. I'm based in Hong Kong, so everyone is on WhatsApp. I don't remember when I last received or sent an SMS. I even call my friends here in Hong Kong using WhatsApp because it's easier.
That's right.
Right about the US. The other country that doesn't do WhatsApp, doesn't use WhatsApp, is Australia.
Is that right? Yeah, it's weird. I tell you what it is. It's WhatsApp basically is free to send. And I think people who are price sensitive generally just like left SMS, because every message costs you something. And if the person who receives it ends up calling you, it's like, that's costing me money as well. It's like, stop doing this.
it's also hugely insecure.
Right. I can't remember the last time I sent an SMS. I don't even check it anymore. It's always going to be somebody trying to spam me anyway. So it's out. Okay, Savita, you got the hardest one. Give me a tool that you think, you know what, if you are in India and recruiting India candidates, you kind of got to be familiar with this one.
Yeah. There are a couple of things I want to say on this. One is, if you for employer branding and connecting with the new gen people, Instagram is really good. Instagram is very, very useful. And then if you really want active passive candidates, there are tools, there are some platforms, AI-enabled platforms, other than, of course, Naukri, LinkedIn, and Twitter is definitely good. There is a platform called InstaHire, which we use, and it's quite good as well. Then
Can
of course the
share
Telegram group.
InstaHire on the chat stream, by the way. Let's share this one.
Yeah. I can do that. So the other one is, of course, like WhatsApp. You also have Telegram, which is another messaging app, which has caught popularity because of privacy issues, and you know, your messages are more encrypted and safer. So Telegram groups are getting very, very popular in recruiting as well.
That's right. And Telegram,
yes. And a very big plus one to what Sarang said about your own ATS. There are several tools. There is a tool called Param, what can be installed on an ATS. It actually mines your old candidates, your own database, and gives you people. So Param is really good. Param.ai, it's good. InstaHire is good too. HYRE. Yeah.
Thank you, Sarang. Thank you, Savita. That's great. Okay, I want to quickly move on. There's one more question I need to ask all of you, though, before I let you go. The scenario is, there's an international company, they're looking to recruit Indian nationals in India, but they don't know how to do it. What is the one piece of advice you would impart on that person or that company to put them in a good standing? What would you say they need to know as they approach the India market, like cold? They don't know it. They don't have local resources at this point. What should they do? Go to you with firstly, Natasha.
I mean, you know, you'll have to break it down. You have to break it down for me. Like, do you want a doctor? Do you want an engineer? It's so different. Like, what India's tech market, non-tech market, it's just so different. Like, there's just different advice. What's the context?
Well, I you know what? I didn't have a context. I was simply thinking, okay, this person just needs
nothing,
guidance in some
nothing
way.
Generic works in India. It's like chalk and cheese. I'm sorry. Don't know. If I don't have context, there's no advice that's right advice.
That is the advice we're looking for. That is the advice we're looking for. It's exactly what you need to tell this person. Okay, we're going to go quickly on this. Thank you, Natasha. Sarang, your view?
So I think know your market very well. In every market, there are different things. If you're looking for blue collar workers, your employee referral is a big, big plus. That's where you get, because you have these close-knitted communities. But if you are looking for white collars, then obviously the Naukris and LinkedIn's. But more importantly, the mindset of a recruiter and a knowing mindset of a candidate, I think, again, because I work in global environment, is very different. The driving factor for candidates is very different. It depends on persona. So please don't bring the same assumptions that you have in Europe to the India. India is very different, and you need to understand.
What is the primary difference, Sarang? We have a German recruiter, let's say they've just landed in Bangalore. They're going to start working. Before you get this guy picking up the phone, what does he need to know?
He needs to know over and above just compensation. What are the growth aspects? What I'm gonna get? Is it just salary? Is it growth? Is it again what kind of projects that I'm going to work? I think the compensation, growth, are like top one or two drivers for Indian. And again, is it a short term versus long?
Just when the punchline was happening, I think we've lost Sarang. That's okay. Quickly go to you, AK. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I would tell them contact
AK.
Yeah, I'll tell them contact AK.
AK, yeah. I was going to say that. You stole my answer.
No.
Contact AK, he's the man.
Yeah, I would say that, Nick, we Indians are very, very title conscious, which is not so different, which is so different from other countries. Because several times I have had multinational companies wanting to hire a sales representative or a manager. No way. We've got to call them as a director or
really good insight. Yeah. So they're sensitive to the titling because that obviously communicates a personal brand.
Everything.
That's important.
Exactly. In India, there's nothing like a confidential salary. By the time an Indian gets a job in America, his father-in-law will tell the neighbors what salary he's got in India. Okay.
That's right. So it's all out there. Okay.
We're fast. Yeah, sorry.
Savita, we go to you finally. Yeah. What is the one bit of advice?
Okay. My one bit of advice would be that, please partner with somebody local. There are several agencies and vendors and people available who help. I think it's always good rather than go deep dive, go in and then burn your fingers and then learn it through experience. You will save a lot of time and money and grief if you actually partner with someone. At least for the first 6 months and get it off to a mode where you have at least 10 or 15 or 20 people. Then you can set up your own team and you'll also get a hang of the market because it's a different region, different culture, different type of market, totally different. So, yeah, I wouldn't advise anyone to go and do it on their own.
A lot of companies seem to be attempting this. Don't try and recruit remotely without any local knowledge. Yeah. Get some boots on
just
the ground,
Just get a partner.
No, unless it's startups. Unless it's startups, please do that.
Okay, listen, we're going to bring on Bharat and Sonal as well. But we're going to say goodbye to Mitasha, Savita, Sarang. We've already said we've lost them. And AK as well. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been fascinating having you on. I think we could
continue
to talk.
Nice to meet you.
There's so much more we could learn from you. Thank you so much for your contributions to date, you three, you four.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, so we're over time, folks, but I'm definitely going to bring Bharat and Sonal on because I want to also speak to operational recruiters that have relocated to Europe, basically. And I just wanted to see whether people who have got very recent experience of recruiting in India and also recruiting in Europe, what is the difference in terms of how candidates behave? How do we interact with candidates and stuff like this? Oh, there he is, Bharat. How are you?
Hey, Hang. I'm doing wonderful. How are you guys? Hello, everyone.
Great to see you, Bharat, and great to see you, Sonal. Thanks for joining the show. I know we only chatted briefly yesterday, so thanks
yes,
for dropping
but
things and
yeah,
joining
I'm
us
really
here.
Happy to be here, Hangit. Really having fun listening to everyone.
Great. Okay, so the folks who don't know you two, can you quickly intro yourselves to the crowd? Bharat, you go first.
Hey, everyone. I am Bharat. I'm one of the technical sourcers at Facebook. I primarily hire for product manager roles for all the international locations outside of the US, which is London, or UK, Europe, Singapore. And before this, I've done recruiting, tech and product recruiting for about seven and a half years in India.
Fantastic. And Sonal, who are you? What is you do?
Yes. So I have a similar experience as Bharat. I 8 years experienced in technical recruiting. Most of this has been in India. I have been in the recruiting consulting side of the recruiting for most of my career, but slowly transitioned towards corporates. Now I've recently moved to UK. So yes, I'm where Hung is. Yes.
we should hang out.
Yes, definitely.
You know, absolutely. There's no reason why not. Exactly. Well, great to have you both. And I wanted to bring you both on the same time because the journey is kind of similar. And it's almost like sometimes you're going to forget what it was like the longer you stay in one place. But you've both like been recent enough to kind of do a compare and contrast. How would you particularly think that engineering talent is different in terms of how they behave? So India engineer versus UK or, you know, German or European engineer. Is there any like behavioral differences that we need to be aware of that people think, OK, if you're going to speak to India engineer, expect this. You speak to a UK person, expect that. So these are going to be broad strokes. We don't want to be scared of make generalizations just for the purpose of this exercise. So Bharat, let's go with you first. What have you found to be the most significant differences in terms of candidate interaction?
Yeah, so the offer shopping discussion that was happening, that is something that I've seen less. And this could be primarily because Facebook as a company, I might be wrong with other as other companies, but when somebody signs a contract, they usually adhere to that contract. They don't go around and then start shopping around because the notice period in Europe is also fairly longer. 2-3 months is a norm. And if somebody says, hey, I've accepted the offer and I am going to join you, they will come and join you. They don't do offer shopping. Or after a month, they don't come back and say, you know what, I've got a better offer. Now I want to renegotiate. That is something that I haven't seen personally in the last 1.5 years. But again, this is with the caveat that this could be because Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. So big caveat there, but it changes the mindset of recruiting, doesn't it? In the sense that you know if you've got the contract signed, that job may be closed and you could kind of go on and do other stuff. Whereas maybe if you're in the India market, you just need to keep extending it because the job isn't actually closed at that point. The person really needs to be on site at least for a certain period before you can, you know, I wouldn't even say relax, but you can kind of consider the job to be kind of close. And I guess this must be exacerbated by just remote working as well, right? So if everyone suddenly is distributed, it becomes easier to do the offer shopping simply because you're more available, you have greater privacy, you can do all of that stuff. Okay, how about you, Sonal? Is there anything else that you've encountered that you think, you know what, this is kind of different to how people behave?
Yes. So I think I'll touch upon the point of what AK said earlier, that India is very designation specific, meaning there are titles people want. And there is, you know, even in my comment on your post, I mentioned there's a lot of comparison that people do with each other, in fact, in terms of compensation, in terms of their designation. They want to always get a perception of being at a higher level, so which is not here in my experience in Europe. So I am based in London. I'm working for hiring in Belgium, so I can give you both the perspectives that people are more open to have that conversation in terms of just the role. There may or may not even have a question about the designation that they will have, right? You would see people, even in India, having experience of maybe 15 years in Uber, they are designated as a software engineer, right? But those people might be people who have some international experience, or they know the drill that might be called just software engineer, but the role that I play is still at a leadership level. So I think there's a lot of conception related gaps in the India market for sure in technical hiring. Whatever Bharat said, I would totally second that.
That's actually really, really interesting. So designation is important. This is very important for employer branding and job advertising, because if you're trying to attract a certain person, as AK said, you can't just say it's a salesperson. That's not the highest status thing you could describe that. It's going to be rejected. Okay, I've got to do this, folks, but I'm meant to do it every week. Take a quick break. Share your LinkedIn in the chat stream right now because we want to continue the conversation. I want everyone else to be able to have dialogue with everyone else who's participated today. This is the moment to do that. Don't let Brain Food Live be a blocker. This is a very interesting conversation. You should all connect with everyone else who is actually in the show, either watching panelists or in the chat stream, because this conversation obviously has a lot more way to go. So LinkedIn in the chat stream, go ahead. Okay, let's have a think about how sort of the relationship with hiring managers changes. So you're both like into corporate now, you're working with a sort of in-house, so to speak. Is there any discernible difference in terms of how the recruiter relationship interacts with the business? Have you picked up anything that's worth mentioning? Bharat, go with you again.
Yeah, the one biggest change that I've seen is the amount of support and involvement that is there from the business. And again, this could be again a caveat for Facebook. But business drives everything, the entire conversation. And we are truly partners. When we go back, present numbers, data, research, anything around hiring and bottlenecks, they genuinely want to help you solve those problems. If I go back and say, hey, this is the problem, they say, okay, let's break down that problem and how we can solve that problem together. And that is something that, one was a surprise. Second, in a couple of companies that I've worked back in India, wasn't the case. I have seen this back in India as well. And slowly, India also is working towards becoming something like this. But that truly partner kind of a interaction that we have as recruiters, TA professionals, is something that is a welcome change for me.
Yeah, obviously, if you feel better as a recruiter when you're treated with this type of respect, and they respect the function. Like they understand is actually really important, rather than hey, go ahead, this is an easy job, go ahead and do it. That kind of attitude, I think, is something that is legacy everywhere, but perhaps a little bit more persistent currently in India than it is in different places in Europe. Okay, how about you, Sonal? Relationships with hiring managers, what have you found as a little bit different from your experience?
There's definitely a lot of involvement here, Hank, in terms of sourcers, recruiters, everybody, all the business owners would sit together and take points from the sourcing perspective as well, not just the offer or taking person in, but what are the sourcing challenges, how are we going about doing that. All the discussions are very much open on the table, which we have a lot of agencies in India, recruiting agencies, and having come from there, I know there's a lot of focus on supplying of resumes, right? We have multiple clients and we need a lot of CVs to go to them, and then again there are competition in terms of recruiting agencies as well. There are so many recruiting agencies in Bangalore itself. There, the tech hub, there are a lot of recruiting agencies that are competing at the same pace as those companies which are hiring these people. So it becomes more and more important for all the sourcers to get involved with the hiring managers, even if they are with any recruiting business. It's I think a corporate's responsibility to take recruiting as an important part, even if they're working with any agency, let them join in as much as any other person working in their own team, and have the challenges discussed about in open. So I think that that's something which slowly has to change in India.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We haven't even talked about the agency market. What is the relationship that corporate has with agencies? How do you work with them? How do they want to work? There's so much we have to uncover, but unfortunately, we don't have the time because we've sucked out all of it. It's obviously too big a chew, right? So this show is always going to be overly ambitious. Let's dive into the questions a little bit, because there's a bunch of people that ask seven questions. You two are going to have to answer these, but I'm going to go one-to-one, right? So I'm not going to make too many choices, but we just got to try and fire this out real quick. Okay, so Adina's asked, what are the insights to hiring interns and graduates? Is there any, this may not be something that you two have any direct experience of. So have you had any experience of hiring at the entry level, university, graduate level? And is there any differences that you can talk about?
Oh, yeah. So one of my previous companies that I've worked is DirectI, and it's very well known at the engineering campuses. The primary reason is there is this platform called CodeChef, which is a platform which helps you get better at coding, data structures, algorithms, and Directa is the parent company of CodeChef, or rather was the parent company. Now it's been transitioned to a different company. Through the CodeChef popularity, everybody knew Directa. We didn't have to do anything in terms of employer branding. We were getting red carpet welcome every time we used to visit the campuses. And these are tier one, tier two, tier three campuses. And all we have to do is, hey, we have to announce that Directa is coming to your campus. Interns or your entry-level engineers, we always used to hire the top talent that is available in India at any point in time. So
yeah, I tell you
kind
something.
Of a breeze through.
But I tell you something, though, that's actually really interesting in the sense that education, if you're providing educational resources for growing talent, that is a that's recruiting.
Context, Hung, sorry to cut you in between. The problem was identified by the CEO when he wanted to hire great talent who were great at coding. He identified there is a gap. He said, Chakir, I'll build a platform which will help everyone learn the coding as a skill. And through that, we now have a continuous kind of supply of great talent that is out there in India.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Okay, we might not be able to get to all of these questions here, folks. So let me just ask a final point to these two guests that we have. What is it that you miss about the India recruiting market now that you've relocated to Europe and you're recruiting in Europe and you're thinking, you know what, why don't they do it? why doesn't this work? Go ahead.
Definitely want to go first here. So yeah. Hung, my... the shock that I had once I started working here is we don't call up people directly. It's so different in India, meaning we have even targets at a very junior level. I've had targets of how many people I'm calling in a given day. And here, the professional space is respected a lot more, meaning we're supposed to take a time from a person and only then fix up a video call, even not even an audio discussion. And if they don't give us their availability, it's not very good to call them directly. So that was one different thing. But I really enjoyed, I think a lot of my experience, I'm not saying that's the right way to go about it, but a lot of my experience has been because I was free to just pick up the call and call some person and understand what they are working on if I'm stuck somewhere. So that's a very different thing here.
I think a lot of people in recruiting do actually miss that as well. But the culture has definitely shifted away from on-spec calling. Exactly. And it very rarely do people do this anymore. But I think there's a lot of learning that can happen, almost a serendipity that can happen from having that type of contact. Okay, Bharat, for you, what have you missed about the recruiting in the India market? Things that you think, you know what, why are these Europeans doing it like this?
I would say the availability of people. Yeah, if I post a job, I know I'm going to get 300 people applying for the job. I don't have to do anything. Here, I now have to go search for the right kind of people, which is good in a way because I'm spending that time understanding the market, all of those. I yesterday's your post on LinkedIn, I saw somebody commented. They said they posted a job. They had 2,400 applications in 24 hours, which is true. Which is true.
Incredible.
So that is something that probably doesn't happen. Do I miss? Maybe yes or maybe not. But you don't have to worry if something bad happens. You can always go back and tap to your the pool of incoming applications that are coming in. That is probably something that I would say come close to missing back from India recruiting.
That's great. It's always one of those where it's just fascinating to explore how different sort of environments. We have universal challenges in recruiting, but they manifest in different ways. And it requires sometimes some subtle changes, sometimes radical changes to do it properly. A message to anybody here who is like thinking of recruiting in India, I think the main thing is like you need to get boots on the ground. You need to get the cultural knowledge. You can't really do it from outside in. If you're trying to do it, be prepared for a very long and tough journey. And it's going to be super painful, particularly if candidates already have abundance mindset. how much increased is that if you don't even have a physical presence in the country? You know, that's going to be even more exacerbated. Okay, that's about it, folks. We've literally burned too much time. So Sonal, thank you so much for joining us at late notice. Bharat, great to see you. Thanks for joining us as well. Sergey, great to see you. We've got one more of these actually before the end of the year. We should talk about what we're going to do about this. That's about it, but folks. So go ahead.
This was super fascinating and very insightful. Thank you, everyone, for participating.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it massively. Follow the channel if you want to hear more. Next week, by the way, we're back to actually not normal timing. We're going to go to 4 p.m. in the UK. So maybe a bit too late for the Indian friends here. Not super late, but it's into the evening. We're going to be speaking to Kevin Wheeler. He is the Future of Talent Institute founder. He's one of the best thinkers, I think, in the business. Very, very excited to speak to Kevin. You would usually pay like a money to get this guy on a screen. I've called in a favor and he's going to come talk to us. So make sure you follow the channel and tune in for next week. Okay, that's it. I'll catch you later.
Bye-bye.
Sorry it took that long, Sergey.
No, it's cool.
That was like, it was too fascinating, right?
It was absolutely amazing. I didn't expect it to be so interesting.
It was good, man.
Yeah, I even enjoyed the D&I conversation because that was very interesting.
Mate, I can't remember the last time I was in India, but it reminds me now I need to go back and visit because it has been like over 3 years now. It's like you got to go spend some time there. Okay, Sergey, listen, you have a good weekend. I know it's late for you. Enjoy your chill out and we'll catch up soon, okay?
Thanks, Kong. Thanks for inviting me. All the best.